Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We look forward to seeing your letters. And you can write us at roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Just a couple programming notes. Of course, we're going to be covering the situation in Brussels. We'll be talking about that situation as well with the panel, but we'll be covering it throughout the morning if events warrant. Also, a reminder that the President of the United States is going to be speaking in Cuba. They've moved up the start time of that speech, and we'll go to coverage beginning at 10 o'clock. The President is expected to speak both about Brussels as well as his trip to Cuba. We'll be bringing that coverage beginning at 10 o'clock this morning. Let me introduce the panel to you, and Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good. It's going to be quite a day today. Chancellor Zimfer will be coming in to do a Capital Connection. We'll have fun doing that. It's always interesting to see what she has to say, especially in light of what's going on at the City University of New York, where there is all hell to pay by very angry at the governor for transferring a huge amount of money from the City University budget. At least that's what they're saying. And we'll ask her about that.
We have Rosemary Armeo with us this morning. She is back, and we have missed you horribly.
Asked back yesterday. I've had classes. I'm now getting back into the groove.
You're completely acclimated.
No, I'm not. My hair, however, is combed. I have gotten that far.
Well, you're rocking
looks
that.
Very
so
nice.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Speaking of rocking the hair, we have Mike Spain with us. He is the associate editor of the Times Union and joins us each and every Tuesday. And plus, you know, when we ask him nicely. And he is here. Good morning, sir.
What did you say, speaking of rocking the hair, we have Mike Spain with us?
Well, it was just a transition, hair? Alan.
Meaning that her hair looks great and Mike's hair looks great.
Oh, I see. Now I understand it,
If I hold my head up high, you won't see the bald spot.
And the same with me.
Mm. All right. Well, you have a cap on, so you cover yours. There you go. All right.
See
that camera. Let's go to what is happening in the world. Of course, we begin, sadly, we begin in Brussels. Terrorist attacks kill dozens. City is shut down after blasts at the airport and the subway. You know a limited amount. There are different numbers. The New York Times is saying it's 26 people dead. CNN is reporting 34 with 170 plus injured. So these numbers, I'm sure, will change, and we'll get some handle on it as the hours go on. Explosions rocked the main airport and the subway in Brussels on Tuesday, killing at least 26 people. The attacks occurred 4 days after the capture of Salah Absalom, who is a suspect in the Paris attacks on November 13th. Two explosions were reported in the departure hall at Brussels Airport, forcing the evacuation. And to my knowledge, as of right now, no group has taken responsibility for the terrorist attacks. However, there is the Prime Minister said we were fearing terrorist attacks, and that has now happened. He called the attacks blind, violent, cowardly, and it is, of course, the concern was that after the capture on Friday of the most wanted man in Europe, that the sole survivor of the 10 men who were believed to have been directly involved in the attacks that killed 130 people in and around Paris on November 13th, that there would be retaliation. And so that is the conclusion that is being drawn at this early hour.
Yeah, it does seem to be another Paris-like attack, which is multiple sites and lots of terror, not just the deaths, but the feeling that it must give residents that you're surrounded. It could be anywhere. That's horrible. I do think it's retaliation for the arrests and a kind of warning to us that you can arrest one or two terrorists, but it's going to continue.
Well, is it retaliation, or was it triggered by the arrest, or was this a terrorist attack that was already in the works, and maybe they just
went ahead with it.
Went ahead with it quickly.
Yeah.
I don't know if you see this. I'm showing a map on the radio, but just for the for our panelists. But you will see that where the airport attack to the subway attack to where the arrest occurred on Friday is about 2 kilometers apart. It's a very small quadrant of which both the arrest and the violence has taken place.
Belgium is a very small country.
Yeah, small country.
Well, you know, part of the problem here is when people, when terrorists are willing to die to kill themselves, which is what this looks like, you know, suicide attacks, what in hell are you going to do about it? I mean, how can it is so frustrating to say, okay, you know, we can't capture them, we can't torture them, we can't waterboard them, we can't do any of that if you wanted to, which I don't, but if you wanted to, because somebody's going to go into this saying, okay, I've drunk the Kool-Aid, I'm going to die for this. That's a terrible thing.
There was a piece of tape that they kept on playing on Morning Edition this morning, which is, I believe, was a Belgian official saying, if somebody, the city has been on edge for weeks, and especially after the arrest, waiting for an attack. And you said, you know it's coming, and you know it's coming, and you know it's coming, but you can do absolutely nothing to stop a person from putting a bomb on their back and walking into a public place and pulling the cord.
What you can do is you can disrupt these efforts by making it more difficult to get the substances you need to build bombs. You can infiltrate these terrorist groups that set up these suicide bombers and perhaps disrupt it that way. It's easier to say than do, but you would hope that an improved lot, peace in the world, or, you know, if society could improve itself, that people wouldn't be so much in despair where they would like to throw themselves, you know, put a bomb around them and throw themselves into a crowd of people would dissipate. But, Alan, you're right. I mean, how can you stop somebody who's determined and doesn't care about their own life and has so little respect for their own life and they have this mission that they envision that they have to carry out.
And with all deference to you, Mike, because I do think you're the nicest guy I have ever met, but with all deference to you, do you really think there won't always be some nut somewhere has a perception that somehow he's at the short end, the losing end, and therefore he has to or she has to do something to get with, and that's the
feeling of desperation that people have all over the world. It's why Donald Trump is rising. I'm sure this is going to help him. So people give up their rights and say,
exactly.
Here, more power to the police. Go. We'll stay in our house and avoid all those public places,
airports, and
marketplaces and churches and synagogues, etc. We're going to avoid all those places and just hunker down. And that doesn't work either. You still have the same problem. But that's what I fear will happen.
Right.
This is not good for the people dead and hurt in Belgium. It's also not good for the rising rightist and fascist forces that we see around the
Absolutely
world.
Right.
U.S. officials are saying that they believe one bomb was most likely in a suitcase, and still no word on the other bomb, although a backpack was mentioned regarding the bomb in the subway.
So was it a mistake to go get that guy and to do an international search, you know, and arrest the French terrorists? The answer, of course, is no. You have to do that, even if this is in response.
That's right. Had he been caught or not, I still think this might have happened.
Might have.
Yeah.
There is also, there are two men, a 31-year-old man and a 24-year-old man, who have been identified as either accomplices or friends who were filmed with Mr. Absalom at a gas station on a highway before the attacks. There's also another gentleman who has been identified as an accomplice, and those two men are on the lookout. They're on the lookout for those two this morning, although they were all weekend after the arrest on Friday.
And do we ever think, very quickly, do we ever think about, really, we say 24 dead? Do we ever think about what one person dead means to a family, to business to friends to children. I mean, it's just more than you can handle.
Well, it is, and especially when, as those numbers increase, and as I said, we're CNN's reporting in the 30s, and also the 170 who are injured and some critically. So, yeah, it certainly gives you pause. 34 dead, 170 plus injured, the latest numbers from the Belgian media. We will take a break. We will come back and continue on and talk about other subjects as well. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Mohonk Preserve New Paltz, presenting the Rock the Ridge 50-Mile Challenge for runners, walkers, hikers on April 30th. Sponsored by I Love New York and Ulster County Alive, mohonkpreserve.org for registration. And Mannix Marketing, Glens Falls, New York. Since 1996, a web design and internet marketing firm working to help businesses get found on the internet. MannixMarketing.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. This morning, we are talking about the situation in Brussels and the two bombings, one at the airport, one at a metro station. We are also discussing your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's go to some of those letters, and then we will talk about other things after our BBC News break at the bottom of the hour.
Judy says, I was very disappointed that Bernie Sanders chose not to speak at the AIPAC conference. If he has issues with the organization's position on Middle East politics, as I'm sure he does, he should have used the opportunity to air them. I feel by pandering to his, quote, progressive base, he took the coward's way out.
We will be talking more about AIPAC after the break.
Can I just say,
yes.
That's not fair, and I'm not a Bernie supporter, but up until this year, candidates who are on the campaign trail during this event were allowed to speak
exactly.
by satellite.
It may have been them.
They changed it, yeah. I don't think that he did anything cowardly.
No, that's good. Michael says, do you think extreme torture should have been used to get information from the recently arrested terrorists to have prevented these attacks? That's what he wrote. Does anybody want to check in?
Yeah.
But
doesn't
it will play into domestic politics for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, like Rosemary said.
As for me, I'm not so sure. I mean,
If it worked, I'd be thinking perhaps otherwise.
But I get your
extreme
position.
Torture doesn't give you good information.
I get your points, both of you. But I know that this is a terrible thing, and sometimes when you get terrible things have to happen. I get it. I hear you. Barry says, there's nothing good that can be said about today's events in Brussels and last year in Paris, and my heart goes out to those who have been killed or injured or emotionally injured, but let's hope this may result in more sensitivity in Europe to the circumstances in which Israel has had to exist for 75 years. I hate to even read that one, but I read it. There's nothing good that can be said about today's events in Brussels and last year in Paris, and my heart goes out to...
I just read that.
I'm so sorry. Steve says, please consider the idea that it was the U.S. overreaction to 9/11 catastrophe, that is, wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, regime change, destabilization, etc., that has led us down the path of terror and retaliation we find ourselves in now.
Sure.
And this is somebody else. Oh, boy. Good morning, panel. The Clip Morning Edition played all morning about suicide terrorist acts. I just wanted to share a book our government has used to spread knowledge to governments and population around the world on answering some of these unanswerable questions about terrorism. It's called Fighting Back by Paul Shamila. Okay. And there were more than 600,000 Iraqi men, women, and children killed during the Iraq War. We should wonder why people are blowing themselves up. How much terrorism did we dole out? How many families destroyed? Chris from Kingston. Panel, terrorism finds ready recruits in the mostly Muslim slums that have grown up around many of Europe's major cities, ignored by their host countries' governments until their denizens despair of ever seeing their lives improve and explode their homemade bombs. I'm not making excuses for the terrorists. Sounds like you are. But when will these governments learn that they must do more to integrate this population into mainstream life? There's no strictly law enforcement solution to this problem. Joe, please don't refer to a terrorist as a gentleman. Please use another word when referring to them. Robert says, I wonder if these guys in Brussels were using encrypted iPhones to plan this in the last few days. You just see by the nature of all of these letters how everybody's view of politics impinges on, on what's
Take
happening.
Take my privacy. Take my iPhone. Just get these terrorists. Yeah.
Well, there is that. Possible. Oh, we did that. Okay. And Helen is going to tell us. Anyone who thinks that the civilized world is not under attack from radical Islam has their head in a dark place. The fact that Brussels has a high percentage of Muslim residents is not a coincidence. The terrorists hide and are aided by the population. Dire measures are needed. That's Greg from Cooperstown. And Paul says, read the bombings today. This will, of course, feed the close the borders narrative. It's starting to make sense to a lot of people. And by the way, Rosemary, you just said that. It's going to help Trump.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Okay. And Tom says, good morning, Roundtable. Well, everybody's freaking out about Brussels, and rightly so. Nothing is new under the sun. This is like a replay of the 70s. Plus, not better or worse than our own domestic terrorism. And that's something else. I guess, Joe, do you see something else up here?
No, that looks good.
I think that's
all right. We're going to take a break in just a second. When you look at this overall situation, as I mentioned, we are expected to hear from the president in about a half hour. As a world leader, what do you say in a case like this? We stand by.
Well, the irony of the president of the United States with a Castro in Cuba, where 60 years ago the world could have ended. There could have been a nuclear war. And that has changed so dramatically. And he's talking about the newest challenge to civilized society going on and playing out like it did in Belgium. It's just a very weird situation.
I just wanted to say one thing. We got a note from Matt. He injected himself quite correctly into our discussion about the efficacy of terrorism. He says, it doesn't matter whether or not torture, quote, works. It is wrong in capital letters. It's forbidden within our Constitution's ban on cruel and unusual punishment, not just for U.S. citizens, but as an expression of a basic human right. If we stoop to excusing its use based on its efficacy, we have truly lost the war for our ideas and worse for our souls. And that's from Matt.
Good letter.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation this morning. We will talk about other issues as well, including the president's visit to Cuba. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we will continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Tuesday morning, the 22nd of March. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us get back to other topics besides what is happening in Brussels this morning. We want to talk, which we'll certainly keep you updated on, and we are expected to go to NPR coverage at 10 o'clock of both that event as well as the president's remarks in Cuba. So let's talk about the president in Cuba. He met with Raul Castro yesterday, and as the New York Times has in their headline, Cuba meeting between Obama and Castro exposes old grievances. I suppose that should not have been too much of a surprise.
The Castros are not making it easy for our president to open up their country. That's for sure. I loved the exchange at the press conference, which Raul is not used to having anyway. And he gets asked a question about freeing political prisoners. And he goes, name them. Just name them and they'll be out. And I truly wish, and a good reporter should have been ready to say, how about, and said these names. That did not happen. And then he scolded reporters for, it's not proper to ask me about political prisoners. And then a lovely moment when I guess the president reaches out to maybe pat him on the back, and instead Raul grabs his hand sort of by here, so his wrist is hanging down and holds it up in the air. Oh, my God, it's so strange.
Yeah.
But it just, to me, the whole thing proves that opening the window and showing how a government should run, which is what Obama has been doing in these today and yesterday, is exactly what should have been happening all along in Cuba. And the people turned out in hordes to watch this.
And
it
it makes the Castros look bad.
It does. Yes.
It does. I mean, transition's coming. I mean, you know, nature will take care of that.
Yeah. God has term limits.
Right. God has term limits. I think the internet is going to open up Cuba. Once they get access to the internet and good, you know, fast internet, people will be able to carry on commerce. They'll be able to communicate around the world, and that will have a world of difference.
Yeah. And also greed. Greed is very important. I'm sorry to have to say this.
You're talking about commerce, aren't you?
Yeah, commerce. In other words, you know, I want to be able to have more money. Did I read somewhere the average salary is something like $25 a week?
It's pretty bad.
A week? Somebody says, well, I want more for my family and the rest of it. And they say, well, you have health, socialized health care. You have this. All true. And it's all good stuff. Mm-hmm. But once we start allowing everybody in a capitalistic system to make what it wants, then you get people who are going to be have-nots.
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue.
Yeah, well, everybody's a have-not there now, practically, so it has to be an improvement.
When we visited in 2010, people wanted soaps, you know, the little bottles of shampoo and things that you can get in hotels, because those sorts of things are impossible to get. And this was at the start of the economic loosening. So, yeah, people around the world want material comfort and the lifestyle that we have in the West. So, of course, they want that. Yeah. And we should be, and we used to be at one time close to Cuba, and we will be again. There's an affinity between the people. I think this is great. I love watching this. I'm laughing. I can't wait to hear the speech today.
One ramification of the whole thing is that I think your paper this morning, Michael, had a story on Major League Baseball.
Oh, yes.
Major League Baseball is now negotiating with the Cubans. Now, we don't know whether...
will not have to be a defector in order to play in the
Leagues.
Yeah. Right. Because the state takes 10% of whatever you... And that violates the various embargoes that we have against
Cuba. What part does the U.S. government take of these Major League Baseball star salaries?
You bet.
It's taxes. It's not 10%. It's a lot more.
Yeah. All right, let's go on to other news as well. And we mentioned AIPAC. We had a letter earlier about Bernie Sanders and his failure to participate in AIPAC. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump on Monday presented sharply different views on how the United States should deal with the Middle East and its relationship with Israel, previewing for an influential pro-Israel audience a debate on foreign policy that could play out this fall if they face each other in the general election. Mrs. Clinton promised that she would stand unwaveringly with Israel while accusing her potential Republican rival, Mr. Trump, of being an unreliable partner for one of America's closest allies. She said we need steady hands, not a president who says he's neutral on Monday, pro-Israel on Tuesday, and who knows what on Wednesday. Speaking to the same audience hours later, Mr. Trump swore his fealty to Israel and condemned President Obama's policies. But Mr. Trump, who describes himself as a master counterpuncher, declined to answer Mrs. Clinton's criticisms, offering a standard appeal to a pro-Israel audience. When I become president, the days of treating Israel like a second-class citizen will end on day one.
And I suspect you all saw that they are now leaking to the press, the Trump people, that his son-in-law, who's Orthodox Jewish, helped him write the speech. His daughter converted to Judaism, and I'm sure he'll use that.
Oh, he did. He already made a big point that his daughter was about to give birth to a beautiful Jewish baby. Why all the candidates are here before a huge lobby, maybe we could talk about, too.
Well, go ahead. Why don't you get yourself into real trouble?
Get into real trouble. I would really love an American foreign policy that could discuss the ramifications for America of this unquestioning support of Israel. It's one of the reasons we are in trouble around the world. And we can't acknowledge it because of the political costs. And you saw that. No one else is speaking. But it's true. I'm sorry. We speak about this.
No. Obama got himself in a lot of trouble.
He has
backed away from an unqualified support of everything that Israel does.
Which is, and look
Netanyahu
how he's...
has come back at him.
Right.
It is a political minefield for politicians. If Trump actually feels he can take a step back and be a negotiator that will bring peace, and that's his assertion, you know, that will appeal to a lot of people. It may not appeal to staunch supporters of Israel, but it will appeal to a lot of other Americans. And Alan, as you frequently point out, it's a very small percentage of the U.S.
2%
population, right?
I mean, even Hillary, who has taken an Obama-like realistic stance in the past, spoke
Stepped
at this event and
this.
Was, you know, she was just like, you know, kissing butt again.
Yeah, but, fundamentalist Christians also are very supportive of
yep.
U.S. policy.
Well, as are many people who think, oh, brother, as many people who think that there is not a possible Arab endgame here. In other words, two-state solution would be great with many people, including many Israelis. The problem, of course, is that drive Israel into the sea seems to be a motivating factor in their behavior. And so when you're dealing with who are your allies when you know who are not, you choose your allies. We keep hearing it's the bastion of democracy. And I know there'll be people who feel differently about this, but in the Middle East, and I find myself very sympathetic to that.
But when you have countries that just refuse to acknowledge the right of existence, you know, you've got a big bridge to
exactly.
No one disagrees with that. There's no one who disagrees with that other than Arabs who are doing it. But we're talking about how about settlements in the middle of contested areas or turning Jerusalem into which is a contested capital into the capital of Israel.
Well, many
these are the kind of policies we're talking about.
Well, many of us believe you're right about that. Look, I am a fierce adherent to the right of Israel to exist. But I have to say, every time Netanyahu does one of those things, it really ticks me off.
Yeah, it's not as black and white as our own politicians, for expediency, paint the situation. We do not talk about the realities in this country of our policy towards Israel.
Let's go to a few letters.
Bernie, says Robert Hastings, I applaud Bernie for not appearing at AIPAC. Unlike the other candidates, Bernie doesn't pander to individual groups except for the poor and middle class. That's what it says. I think, did we read one, Robert? I think we did. Alan's saying that Cuba's universal medical care is good only shows that you've never seen it up close. All right. Thank you, Robert. Let's see. Jerry says, hi, how about adding two Cuban baseball teams to the major leagues? I think that's a great idea, Jerry. Maybe even one.
One for the American League, one for the National League.
Yeah.
They can play the Toronto Blue Jays, you know.
Okay, so Bob says, say what you wish, but these bombings are one good reason why situations where people flooding over borders without any control presents very dangerous consequences. The idea of torture is mindless barbarism, and no, I'm not opposed to legal immigration. Okay.
Yeah, that is true. This is not going to hurt the cause of those people who support helping refugees.
Susanna, no. Okay. All right, we're moving ahead. hi, Alan. Nature has term limits. God has nothing to do with it. That's from Tom. I always say that God has term limits. Don't you see?
Yes.
And he is saying it's nature, not God. But I think nature and God are pretty close. I don't know.
Fair enough.
Now...
Your God may vary. Void in Wisconsin.
Oh, boy.
Whoever he or she may be.
That's right.
James says, letter writers, why are you defending excusing terrorists? And I'm a liberal, and no, torture doesn't work. All right. And William says, Listeners might be interested in the book Time for Outrage by Stephen Hessel. Didn't we read that already? We did, probably. Okay, but now that we've read it twice, I don't see anything else. Do you, Joe?
That is what I
see. Oh, there's one at the top.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, Roundtable. Bernie speaks truth to power. Although he did not attend AIPAC, he's the only candidate that speaks to the Palestinian predicament and the issue of settlements. That is not cowardice.
May I ask a question? Because you seem to know the answer, Rosemary. So Bernie Sanders is in California campaigning, trying like crazy to win electoral votes there. It's crucial if he's going to stop Hillary from gaining enough delegates. Is that the real reason that he wasn't at AIPAC in Washington, D.C. yesterday?
Impossible to say, of course, because he is a politician. And despite the image he tries to cultivate, he's an extremely shrewd and calculating and ambitious politician. So is he out there and use that as an excuse? And in the past, it has never been a problem. So I would not be surprised to say that he put that into his reckoning, figuring he could campaign and make an appearance. But then he chose definitely not to cancel events in California and to come to the
right. And your earlier point is very well taken, Rosemary, which is that up to now you're always allowed to do that.
Yeah.
You're always allowed to check in.
Yeah.
You know, but.
So in this case, no, I don't think he was making a statement to the Jewish lobbyist. I think he was he made a campaign plan and
rock, paper,
he could keep
scissors.
It.
This is the one. This is one that's more important.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue and talk about a couple of other things, including some poll numbers. And because Rosemary's back and because there was a development yesterday, I really want to hear her take on Hulk Hogan. We'll be back after this break.
Support for WAMC comes from Teakwood Builders, boutique custom builder and remodeler working throughout the Capital Region, providing on-site management, craftsmen, and designers for home additions or remodels. TeakwoodBuilders.com. Center for Natural Wellness School of Massage Therapy, offering massage therapy training in the Capital Region, announcing massage demonstration and info session Tuesday, April 5th at 6 p.m. CNWSMT.com for more information. And Baba Louie's Great Barrington and Hudson, New York, featuring lasagna night every Monday with salad and a basket of bread. BabaLouie'sPizza.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our battle discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. A little brisk discussion during the break. Always good to. I was saying just as we're going out into the break that we talked about the Hulk Hogan story yesterday. But I'm very interested in Rosemary's reaction. She wasn't with us yesterday, but yesterday there was more. They now have the punitive damages. So a Florida jury awarded punitive damages totaling $25 million on Monday and a second blow to Gawker coming on top of the $115 million that the online news outlet must pay for posting a sex tape of the former professional wrestler known as Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I don't feel sorry for Hulk Hogan. However, I was appalled at Gawker. They demeaned the First Amendment. The First Amendment is not intended to protect this sort of stuff. And they didn't even make an effort to present a good case. They just got up there and were insulting to the judge, to the court. And if I had been in a jury, I would have awarded them tons of money, too.
That
Gawker
won't stay.
Was wrong.
I mean, in all
it
likelihood,
yes,
it will be a fraction of that, but it is a victory.
The whole magazine isn't worth that much.
Right. So, I was just going to say, so if it doesn't, if the higher courts don't reverse, I take it they're
it's the end
of business,
of Gawker, right?
Right? Yeah.
They'll have to be liquidated to pay whatever. I mean, they may anyway. I mean, a fraction of that is still
a lot
of money.
Yeah.
And it will at least force other websites, these celebrity websites, to consider perhaps for legal reasons, not because they believe in the First Amendment, to maybe hold back some of the things that they might otherwise
they also,
do.
I have no idea why they didn't settle. Why did that go to a trial?
Because they thought that they were going to get they thought they would be protected by the First Amendment.
Oh,
Hulk Hogan or Terry Bollea, whoever, was looking to make a big score monetarily, and that's what he did.
He did, but Gawker was completely unprepared that I can see. I mean, they didn't even put on an appearance of of serious professional responsibility. It was like, what we had a great film, and it was like really dirty. We figured people would like it, and so we put it on.
And then they also talk about, you know, it was news because of the size of Hulk Hogan's private parts.
Please.
I mean, you know, give me a break.
So, and interestingly, it was $15 million. What? $15 million.
He won't talk about Jewish lobbyists, but he'll talk about Hulk Hogan's penis.
$15 million in punitive damages.
Yes, and then I'm sorry, I got sidetracked. I apologize. $25 million was the award. $10 million of it was for the publisher, $15 million for the magazine, which I thought was interesting. They made the distinction.
And I'm sure it was his appearance on the stand, which was so incredibly offensive.
Yeah. Oof. All right, let's move on to other issues. And I'm doing so as fast as I possibly can.
Good. You need
biting my lip.
You need to distract Alan.
Let us talk about what happened.
Could you pass my thermos for a moment?
No, stop. Don't even know where to go. Okay, let's go to the New York Times poll, shall we? Let's talk politics for a moment. Just a reminder, in about 10 minutes, we'll be going over to NPR coverage regarding the president's speech in Cuba, as well as his remarks about the tragedy in Brussels this morning. Alarmed by the harsh attacks and negative tone of their presidential contest, broad majorities of Republican primary voters view their party as divided and a source of embarrassment and think that the campaign is more negative than in the past. That, according to a New York Times CBS News national poll released on Monday. The dismay has not set back their leading candidate, however. While about 4 in 10 Republican voters disapprove of Donald Trump and how he has handled the violence at some of his rallies, Mr. Trump has also picked up the most support recently, as several rivals have left the race. 46% of primary voters said that they would like to see Mr. Trump as the party's nominee.
Which is very interesting, considering the fact that all along, when he was winning, the best thing that they could say, the opponents, the competitors, was, well, he only got 30% of the electorate. Now he's up to half. And he always said, what, are you kidding? If they get out, I'll get some of those. And he was right, of course.
And they also seem to have come to, I don't know actually if it's peace, but 3/4 of those polled said he'll be the nominee.
Well, you know, it really depends. That's why this article is so interesting, because it really depends on whether or not, when it's all said and done, the Republicans will say, we are not going to put up with this guy. And therefore, by acclamation, when we walk in, the chair of the convention will say, how many do you need to get nominated?
1237.
1237. We're changing it because it's a 1237 majority. We're going to change it to a supermajority of so-and-so. And everybody will hold up their hands by acclamation. And Trump, knows that that's what they've got planned. And so the real question is this, are we going to see a reformation of our political system and our political parties right now, that the Republicans will be out of business and that they'll have to find somebody else?
Well, some people are advocating for Trump to get the nomination and for him to be defeated miserably so that they can rebuild the Republican Party. Others think the better scenario would be for Cruz to run and lose and
rebuild the party. And others are saying, let's have two candidates, two parties, and we'll rebuild everything. But any way you figure it, it's almost like they're giving up this election, because in every one of those scenarios,
well, they're giving it
looks
up
like a Democrat would
they're
win.
Giving it up with their Supreme Court strategy. That is so stupid. Wow. They're giving it up because they just can't get it through their thick skulls that this is going to be part of the problem that's going to kill them.
The lack of governance, to just gridlock, is what are polls showing about that? Are American people saying, "Oh yeah, it's the same thing Democrats do"?
No,
hold up elections, or is it?
No, they've always said what you first alluded to, Rosemary. They have always said there's gridlock in Washington. That's disgusting. And every politician who goes out there does exactly that. They say there's too much gridlock playing to that poll number.
Well, there is several different scenarios whereby the Republicans could lose the Senate. they could possibly lose their supermajority in the House. I don't know that anyone is suggesting that they could lose the House of Representatives to the Democrat.
But it's early.
It is early. It is early. A lot can happen. And if, a lot can play out. It's only the end of March.
You are so right.
Meanwhile, voting today in Arizona, Idaho, and Utah.
It's a caucus in Utah, I believe.
Utah is worth looking at because of
Mitt Romney's endorsement of Ted Cruz.
Right. Well, no, because
his multiple endorsement.
Yeah, that's right.
Of Cruz fun? They're like so reluctant. Oh. Every one of them.
Well, Romney was campaigning for
Lindsey Graham.
I know.
But did you read Lindsey Graham's words? Endorsement of Cruz. It was like, oh, poison. It's vile. It's poison. It's awful. But it's better than Trump.
But now. He's campaigning. Mitt is campaigning for himself. I am convinced that's what this is all about.
He's just saying vote for Cruz as a strategy to stop Trump, so then I can walk in and take the
nomination. Well, and he's very careful to say in this state, I believe that for Utah or I believe for Arizona, this is the best course of action for you. And then when I move on to the next state, I'll figure out something else.
Well, they might be able to do it. I mean, they're coming close. There are reasonable scenarios. They're probably, a minority percentage that they'll work, that they could show up at the convention in Cleveland in July and have Trump not have the 1237 that he needs.
I mean, that seems to be the smart bet at this point.
Well, that's the first line of defense. Yeah. The first line of defense is don't let him have it and then do whatever you want at the convention. But the second line of defense is he gets it and then you change the rules.
Oh, yeah.
And that would be more difficult, but possible. Yeah.
Well, more difficult. These people seem very desperate to keep him out.
But more and more establishment Republicans are backing him. I mean, Newt Gingrich and Chris Christie and Jeff Sessions.
Usual suspects.
Right. Yeah. They're all saying it's just what you painted at the beginning. You're choosing between the party. You're going to lose the election, but you keep the party intact, or you go after the election.
And don't think that whatever those things that have led us to this situation in this election won't still be present in the next election.
Oh, sure.
They will.
Sure. Right. This could be the means by which the Republican Party takes back the party from the Tea Party side of the Republicans.
I don't see it. I think as long as you have the zealots showing up in the primaries and very few others, this is what's going to happen.
Well, there was a big article in Sunday's New York Times about Rick Perry.
Very
interested in going off on his own on the libertarian line and running as a Tea Party candidate. That seems like suicide, but I don't know.
All bets are sort of off.
Oh, brother. Right. We have this guy who used to work here. He said, oh, brother, all the time. Oh, brother.
Well, the libertarians would be able to get him onto the ballot in nearly all states.
Right, because they actually have a ballot on.
They have a system in place.
And where else has he got to go?
Well, and one of the things they were even saying about Michael Bloomberg, he had the money, but it would still take a lot to get him on the ballot.
He'd have to begin right now. Have to be underway right now, and he has pulled back his lawyers that were all over.
Well, because he's a responsible, decent human being who knows
exactly.
What he's
but the point being
to.
That if you have another candidate that wants to start a third party, they have to start now unless they go onto an established.
Right,
party
but if they
line.
Get on the ballot in California, New York, Ohio, and Texas and Florida, they could shift the balance and tilt it towards the Democrat, and that's probably what they would do.
Well, we are out of time. Just a reminder that we will be taking NPR coverage beginning at 10 o'clock of the president in Cuba.
Soon.
Talking not only about his trip to Cuba, but of course, the tragic terrorist event in Brussels this morning. Alan, Rosemary, Mike Spain, thank you very much. We'll be back tomorrow for another go-round, and we'll continue our coverage of what is going on in this world. We remind you that you can write to us, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll also have more Roundtable depending on when NPR coverage continues. Stay tuned.